Welcome to this week's Business Matters, brought to you by Age UK's Engage Business Network. This is our regular look at the commercial world and our opportunity to chat to business leaders and influencers on topics that matter to the older consumer. The ways in which companies reach their consumers has become an increasingly complex process. Gone are the days, it seems, when companies could push out their marketing messages and bombard would-be consumers with unique selling points. Since the advent of social media and the subsequent empowerment of the consumer, there's been an increasing amount of talk about emotional engagement. And this emotional engagement has matured into the much broader spectrum of user experience. So what is user experience? Is it another term for what is ostensibly just good customer service? Or do we as businesses have to become much more sophisticated in our consumer engagement? Is user experience something we ignore at our peril? Or is it something we can add to our marketing strategy in a piecemeal way? I'm Ian Rutter, and this week's Business Matters looks at user experience, and in particular research and design. And to help us to make sense of this very complex marketing science almost, I'm delighted to welcome Janet Buell. Hello, Janet.
Good afternoon.
Janet's passion is studying human behaviour and how it relates to the products, services and spaces around us. Having degrees in both psychology and industrial design, Janet is able to translate insights and observations into tangible designs that speak to the user's goals. Whether an interactive web experience, product, space or system is under review, Janet's experience enables her to align user feedback with business goals and combine these into intentional experience design. Janet's broad range of expertise has allowed her to present innovative, user-centric design solutions to a variety of industries across North America and the UK, from software to hardware, healthcare to education. Now, in my introduction, you'll have noticed the word passion cropped up on more than one occasion when I was outlining your expertise, your various expertise. And passion is an emotive word and seems to say a great deal about user experience. Is it about passion? What is user experience in its broadest sense? Janet, do you want to kick off?
Sure. So I think typically we look at user experience as, can you perform a task? Is it usable? But we also look at it as, is it useful? On top of that, though, we look at the social and the emotional factors. So even if a product is usable or it suits your needs, it might not be used or people might not like it because you're lacking that social factor, that emotional wow factor, or, you know, the talk about thing that is harder to measure than it is so much as usability.
And is it just about product, or is it about service, product, but a whole range of things? I mean, is there any boundary to user experience, or does it cover everything that we deal with?
So I would say with the, you know, user-centered design would be putting the user in the center of the process. So it could be a product, a design, a service. Typically UX, you'll hear that word thrown around a lot, would be focused more on software, you know, different interaction things. But I think it goes across all products.
Obviously, user experience is in its infancy, if you like, what did you call it? I mean, as a science, I don't know what you call it, but it is in its infancy. And again, was it sparked off by website usability first and foremost, and then has expanded into other areas because the whole web experience and the consumer touch point has become so much wider in terms of multi-channel marketing and customer service. So was it the website that came first, and then how do we use that website most effectively? And that's where user experience has come in.
Well, when we say user experience, if we're talking about software, that's a little different. But in the 40s or 50s, they actually did aircraft and built aircrafts and were putting users in to test legroom and things like that and modeled it. So they were doing user-centered design back then. So it shouldn't be a new idea. I mean, why wouldn't you want to talk to people that you're designing for? It seems kind of an obvious thing. But I think the more competition you have, once you start, you know, if that aircraft now has legroom, now every other aircraft wants to do things like that. And now that you have smoother experiences, like you were just saying, that, you know, now you've set the benchmark, so we can't ever go back. Like, we used to be okay with 15 minutes of dial-up in the modem. Now, if it takes 30 seconds, we get angry and go to a new device or look for something else. So I think there's an element also of advancing technology and standards that we start to get used to.
I mean, I take your point, yes. I mean, mean, user testing's always been there. User testing's been there for a long time, but it does go much further than that, because it's the various touch points along the journey. So it's not just about what happens when you get in the aircraft and have you got enough legroom. Mm-hmm. It's about how you greet at the check-in desk.
Absolutely.
How are you taken to the aircraft, how long you actually mm-hmm. have to wait in the plane, mm-hmm. what happens when you get out. It's a much bigger picture.
Absolutely.
And the other interesting thing is it's not just about good design. It goes beyond that. So you're looking at design, business strategy, empathy, design patterns that align business goals with user desires. So the emotional aspect comes into it in a much greater way. And I always found that strange when companies started talking about emotional engagement. What does that mean and how do you gauge it? And I'd like to delve, if I may, in how you start to work with your customers to take them on this process of understanding and actually changing, ostensibly, a lot of their business models. And I think one of the problems that I envisage is, and I've seen this with some clients, is that you think that when they ventured on this path going down the internet route and people started getting their websites and they started to develop, it became more and more expensive to develop sophisticated websites, because obviously the systems that sit at the back end, whether it be SQL or Oracle or some of these other bespoke databases that drive the website, are very, very large and therefore very expensive. Yet you get to a point where you think, right, okay, the users, we're not getting enough out of this. We need to start doing something with this website to make it more financially viable. So we're going to ask our users how they want to use it, which could throw a complete spanner in the works in that the way that your website is designed and the way it's actually being populated by this great big database thing at the back end is not working the way that your users want it to work. So you're actually asking them, in many cases, to turn the whole process on their head. Where do you start in this process, and how do you lead the customer, the business client, through this process and actually get a solution at the end? Big question, Janet, but we'll start off step by step.
It's quite a big question. I guess the thing that we're talking about, you talked a little bit about customers and then users. So a big thing is if you're asking people what they want, they're going to throw a whole list of functional requirements that they probably never use. So that would be the customer. When you're talking about the user, you would just watch them and see what they use. And actually, they probably use 10 out of the 100 things that you do. So that's one way to focus on, if you had an existing product, well, let's just see how people use it now. Let's see what's working well. You can do a usability test, or talk to people, do some ethnography, maybe, meaning hang out with people, see their day to day. But I think for us, the first question is, where are you in the design process? Do you have that idea? Are you in the design phase? Are you at the you've already launched a product and now you want to know what people think? So I think that's the first thing that you need to get the background.
Because that's a difficulty. Now, most mm-hmm. people would say that design should always come at the beginning of the process. Now, obviously, that's impossible in some cycles because the product's already there or the website's already there. So it's almost a retrospective look now that we're asking them to take mm-hmm. to take this stance, which can, as I say, suddenly throw up all sorts of things where it says actually your business is probably operating at 50% of its yes. capacity because you really haven't taken into account these users, your users' views.
Right.
So does it become difficult then to challenge that?
It's not difficult. I think the usability test, seeing actual videos of people using a product and seeing them have problems or difficulties completing tasks that you thought were easy enough, is quite a good push to get into the whole design process. I mean, that would be the bare minimum. But what we find is people come in for, one or two things thinking they can just, check off on the list. Oh, yeah, we've done this. We've done usability, or we've done user-centered design. And, well, really, you should have involved users throughout the whole process, from the I have an idea to I'm designing some things. And I think even when we were talking about the return on investment, one of the returns is it's a lot easier to make changes in the design phase when you're working on paper than it is once you've coded a product. So that's another thing that you can come back, and usually you come back to them when it's really heavy and they say, oh, we haven't done anything, and they're surprised, but then they bring you back and they start to put it into them. Sometimes it just takes time, whereas other companies have known it and it's part of their whole process in their design.
Why a business is so slow at creating accessible solutions? I mean, looking at apps for blind people, and when you think that, I mean, we're part of the Go On team that's looking at sort of getting 5.5 million older users online who've never been online. This is a big drive for us to get people online. Yet, too many businesses are not creating or not providing, if you like, the benefits to entice these people online, because they're not technophobic. They actually just want to see the benefits. If they can see the benefits, they'll go online and they'll stay online because they'll enjoy using this technology because it enhances their life. So why do you think that businesses are not doing enough? And I've seen your passion in action, you know, at a hackathon that we went to, and we'll talk about the hackathon in a minute because people are bound and don't want to know what it is. But Janet, do you find it a struggle to actually say to businesses, you need to create the right presence to get people online and to actually help these users? Is it a difficult battle?
I think so, because I think, like you said, it's coming from many areas, and a lot of the times it's coming from marketing in some sense, or the business goals are that we've kind of defined sort of who our audience is based on different factors of, you know, I'm not in marketing, so I don't know how they come up with these things, but generally they decide, and you can say, well, you know, you might be missing a market or this or that, but generally that's kind of how the process has started, at least for us. So the push to get into different markets is different as a designer, I think, than business goals. And unfortunately, I've seen that even when I started with industrial design. There's lots of products that aren't accessible that for many people. That's a shame, and I hope that the more that we talk about this, the better that people will think more in terms of accessibility. And I know there's some minor things that we have on websites that we can help, but certainly when you have someone who's nearly blind, it's not going to cover that.
And it's always difficult, actually. We've had this problem when you're talking about inclusive design, is the fact that we're actually putting a label on something, mm-hmm. which again is something that people avoid. And if you, I mean, you cite some of the sort of old examples like OXO Good Grips that are held up as a sort of paragon of inclusive design, but it's 30 years old. The mm-hmm. concept wasn't that. There aren't actually that many case studies since then that you can hold up as an exemplar of inclusive design. Because a lot of companies don't want the label, because they think, well, by giving it the label inclusive design, it means it's aimed at a specific market instead of being aimed at as wide a market as is reasonably possible. Mm-hmm. So accessibility is a tricky concept at the best of times to get across to people. So user experience must be difficult as well.
I think that though we can reach quite broadly. I mean, I think there's certain things that you can put on. I mean, I think there's standards now with just even with font sizes or colors, and, you know, usability principles that we make sure go into design. So if you're going to go for a really colorful website, make sure that you can also do a black and white one, look at contrast, look at all these different things. And it won't affect actually the overall experience of the product. It'll just broaden the audience. So I think that's what's important, that designers also learn that adding an accessible approach is not a negative to your overall design. And I think there's enough knowledge, I think, now out there of principles that you can use, standards that can help to go into sites so that we don't look at them as just, oh, this is an accessible site.
Believe me, it does not. I remember, you participated in a workshop that we held on user experience. And one of the clients there did not know about the World Wide Web Consortium. So, I mean, businesses just don't know it exists. Mm-hmm. So can you point, and that's been there for a long time, with basic guide notes on what is an accessible site and sort of basic foundation stones for a website. And yet there are businesses there who are actively trading online, and this is a big marketing tool for them, who have no concept of what they should and shouldn't be doing as basic principles. So is it about increasing awareness in businesses, pure and simple, and saying, actually, you've got to do this, because if you don't, you will potentially be out of business in 5 years' time? Can we tell them that sort of hard stuff? Actually be that
Please.
Brutal.
That would make my job easier.
Why do people come to you? I mean, is there something that they say, I have a need, I've got to go to see Janet? And
there are many, many reasons. You know, there could be anything from, we actually have a UX department, but we have too much work. There could be that, how do we stay innovative? There could be the, we've never done this before. We've heard that, you know, everyone's talking about this UX thing. Maybe we need to do it. There's many, many factors of why they come to us. What's the greatest thing, though, is if they come to us for one thing and then they learn how our process works, that it's inclusive throughout the whole design process, it can actually your end return on investment's a lot higher by including users. And I think that once we have a partnership, like you were talking about earlier, that's how you get it in. And sometimes it's just having a request for something really small, and then you create a partnership with your clients, and then...
Mm-hmm. Your passion, because you also passionate about human behavior. Yes. I mean, is that, again, what drives you, is looking at the way that people use things mm-hmm. and then analyzing that and coming up with a solution that helps businesses?
Absolutely. I think the most fun about my profession is that you're in so many different environments as well. And when you're saying about being an expert, and, you know, we do have to be the expert in design or in research, or it feels like this, but in terms of the actual place that we're designing for, been in so many different fields, even in investing. I don't invest myself, but the point is that I'm talking to users and I'm learning from them. I'm not designing for me, and I think that's the most important thing about, you know, user-centered design, is that it's not about you. And it's very interesting to think when, you know, because as a designer, you want to design right away. You know, it's you get excited about ideas. And then you start talking to someone and you learn, wow, actually, I was really off track, or, you know, or you get inspired by things. And I think that's the most fun for me, to talk to a million different populations of people, different groups and organizations and stuff that I can learn from. And I think it's that constant learning cycle that you get that...
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between a customer and a user? Is there a difference?
There could be. So we like to say there's customers, users, and clients. So a customer is someone who purchases. A customer can also be a user, because they could purchase. Let's say I buy Microsoft Word, and then I use it. I would be a customer and a user. If I'm a client, it means that I bought it again, or I start to have a relationship with Microsoft. So, but you could have two different types of people, or three different scenario. So it doesn't, a customer could just be a one-off, I just purchased the product and now I have nothing, I don't care about the experience because I'm giving that to my colleague or something like that. So we have to understand, you know, the touch points. But when you were talking a little bit about the whole design, and I think that one of the problems is defining the word design as well, because there's service design, experience design, there's visual design, there's industrial design. I think that some of the problems is that we're looking at these as separate things, and the areas aren't really communicating together. So if we're thinking a customer experience, how do they become aware of the product? How do they explore the product? How do they compare the product? Certainly in a UX, you would, you know, set this up with a website, but you're going to have marketing material, you're going to have brand identity, you're going to have all these things that all need to mesh together. And I think almost if you think of a hotel, you know, it might be a place you sleep, but the minute you enter, you drive up the driveway, you're greeted at the door, you're walking into that. It's all the different touch points within your organization as well that need to not feel that they're so distinct, I think, when you're developing a product or a service. Because, you know, if you buy a cell phone, you're not just getting the cell phone. You went into a store, you learned about it, you heard it from your friends. There's a bunch of different things that populate into that.
So and that throws in the sort of elements of customer service that, I mean, mm-hmm. from our own statistics, I know the over 50s, 62% of people that we asked in our research said that if they received poor customer service, they wouldn't go back to mm-hmm. that retailer anymore. So that's a huge statistic. Mm-hmm. So the user experience is, as I say, a very sort of longitudinal thing. It covers a whole range of those particular mm-hmm. touch
Even
points.
Even just support. You know, or how did I learn about the product when I opened it up? Did it work? Like, the greatest thing was that Apple did was they started charging their cell phones. You know, if you remember when you used to get cell phones and they weren't charged, because the first thing you want to do when you open up the package is to use it.
Yeah, and you got to plug it in for 24 hours.
Who wants to do that? Yeah. You know, and they thought about that. I mean, you have to think of the out-of-box experience. You have to think of every touch point that someone's going to be using your service, even to the point where they're upgrading, they're recycling your product.
Is it vital, do you think, for businesses to adopt a UX policy if they want to survive? Is it that critical? I mean, do you, Janet, think it's
absolutely. I mean, if we're, and again, because it's so broad, it's hard to focus. If we're just speaking specifically on, say, a website, you can get lucky, right? So we're not going to say that there aren't people who haven't done it and haven't been successful. But your odds are that you're not going to be lucky, and you're going to launch something and you're going to go, oh shoot, why isn't it working? Now we have to bring it back to users, and then you discover you have to completely redesign it. So in that factor, it is critical, because you're spending so much money developing it. But I think certainly to be innovative, you have to keep your eye on your audience, you know, and if, you know, people, we're talking about Apple all the time, but everyone uses an example that they don't do research, but they do a huge amount of research. You know, they do a ton of user research. A lot of these major companies do, and you have to keep, as well as making a usable product, it has to have that edge now to compete, I think. So I would say it's critical.
If you'd like any further information regarding this afternoon's program, do email us at thewireless@ageuk.org.uk. That's thewireless, all one word, @ageuk.org.uk. Join us and our guests next Thursday for another edition of Business Matters. But for now, have a good evening and enjoy your weekend.